Hello and welcome. Scare track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
The
quality of the set was amazing.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey, and on today's episode, I'm interviewing Andrew Porter of Firefly Creations. Now, Andrew has brought us some fantastic attractions over the years. Back in 2012, we were introduced to Slasher, an amazing immersive scare attraction that really did change the face of the UK haunt scene. Since then, we've experienced Nocturnal, Soul Seekers, Love Hurts, and Insomnia, just to name a few. These attractions are always instant classics, and we have Andy to thank for that. I'm very excited to get Andrew Porter onto the Scare Track Podcast today to talk about how he got into creating these immersive scare attractions and the theme park industry as a whole, how he's worked with Screamfest Burton and other scare events, and of course also talking about Firefly Creations and what they can offer, along with his time working with Merlin Magic Making and creating attractions such as Room on the Broom, the Gruffalo, and the newest attraction, Croc Drop, at Chessington World of Adventures. So, without any further ado, it's myself interviewing Andrew Porter of Firefly Creations.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said, I am joined by Andrew Porter from Firefly Creations. Andy, welcome to the Scare Track Podcast.
Thanks, Mikey. It's great to be here. Excited to talk to you all about the industry that I love and very passionate about.
Absolutely, big time. It's a real honour to be getting to chat to you. I've experienced plenty of your attractions, whether it be scare attractions, theme park attractions, and I know lots of our listeners today, whether they knew it or not, have definitely probably experienced either a scare from you or something within the theme parks. So I want to sort of start way back, really. At the moment, you're obviously working for Firefly Creations Limited. You're creative director, a storyteller, a writer, consultant, and you've created loads of attractions that we would have experienced over the years. But what first got you into sort of theme parks and screen parks? Immersive attractions. What was the hook that really got you into it?
Many, many sort of clashing of stars and planets and circumstances that kind of got my fascination. I'm a very sort of all over person. It takes me an awful lot to focus, which by the end of this podcast, that's probably going to last 12 hours, you'll all realize how kind of all over the place I can be when I don't focus. It was really as a child growing up and the influences that I had around me. My parents would take me and my brother to places, museums. We'd go on walks in the countryside in Derbyshire. And while we were there, we would play. We would do all of these wonderful things and all these stories that would kind of come about of it. And they used to take us to theme parks at the time. The American Adventure was still going and quite popular with Silver Dollar City. And I was terrified of the attractions, absolutely, really mortally terrified of them. But I would beg to kind of go back. I was just obsessed with watching them go round and almost just in awe of the majesty of an attraction going round a roller coaster track. And as I grew up, I was always very arty. I liked to draw. I liked to play Roller Coaster Tycoon, and as like all of us did. And it wasn't until I was 14 years old when I was with a group of friends that forced me on Nemesis. And yes, I was forced, and Nemesis was my first roller coaster. And
yeah, same here. I was forced on by my parents, and it was my first one as well. Absolutely terrified of the thing.
I thought I was going to die as I was going to that lift. And it was actually, I always mention the guy's name. I've spoke to him years and years ago. It was a guy called Lee Shouts, and he pushed me in the restraint, and he said, "You're going on it. You're going to enjoy it." And I just remember coming off with this incredible feeling of confidence, of achievement, yeah, of ecstasy, really, that one, I'd achieved to do this and I was still alive, which was quite good.
Definitely.
And two, it brought us closer together as a friendship group, that we had a story to tell. And those emotions are extremely powerful when you can give something back to people and do something positive for them.
Definitely.
I always think it makes the world a bit of a brighter place. And
yeah,
I wanted to do that. That since that day, that's all I've ever wanted to do. And I always say to people, you know, what's your passion? What drives me? Well, what drives me and what gets me up in the mornings? I just want to make the world a better place through themed entertainment. Mm-hmm. I'm very simple. There's nothing more complex to me. I just want to design theme parks and kind of be left alone to do it. So, you know, and I started writing. I started telling stories, and it was more than the design of the attractions and the storyline that went about them, and how we can emotionally touch guests through storytelling and themed entertainment, and how that impacts the families and friends that ride the attractions that I'm very lucky to be involved with and have designed over my career so far.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? The story you just told, it really just reminded me of my childhood. And although we've gone in very different directions, you create the experiences, and I enjoy the experiences. But I speaking to a few people, the people like us that really enjoy either theme parks or roller coasters, scare attractions, haunts, whatever you want to call this, you know, this fantastic escapism experiences, we all used to be terrified of them when we were kids. It seems like something brilliant comes out of the terror, and it takes something like going on Nemesis or another big roller coaster, or some people seeing their first horror movie, just to click the switch, and Nemesis was the switch for you.
Absolutely. You know, Alton Towers was my stomping ground. It's kind of, you know, where I grew up and where I originally came, a roller coaster enthusiast, and I knew everything about the roller coasters and how the roller coasters worked. And mm-hmm. when I originally was going to have a career, I wanted to design roller coasters. That's where I wanted to be. But It was very quickly that I decided that I actually wanted to design the stories around them and the experiences around them. And I think it's actually Oblivion that did it at Holden Towers. But when I went, I was 14, and it was in 1998. So Oblivion had just opened. It was brand new. And again, an absolutely terrifying machine where I developed the rule of three. And the rule of the three for me was quite simply, I would see a ride three times, and if I didn't go on it, and the third time I would see it, I'd go on it. And that came from Oblivion. I went with my friends, I went on Nemesis and said, "Look, I nearly had a heart attack on that. I can't go on that one." We went another time and I couldn't do it. We went the third time and I got the courage to go up and do it. And I think walking through that queue line with its atmosphere, with this incredible piece of machinery, I mean, Oblivion's an absolute monster. It's so big, it's bold, and it's the way it's been designed of this industrial steel, and the cars are just so big. At the time, it was, I think we all know the sound of when it hits the hole and when it comes out, and then when it hits the brakes and the whole thing shakes and it makes that sort of noise that we all sort of know.
Yes, definitely.
Coupled with the two guys screaming at each other and with all the lights flashing, and you know, you go into the station, they press the button, and you know, welcome to Oblivion, and at the time it actually used to say don't look down at the top.
It did.
Yeah. You know, all of those wonderful things that go into it, and that's when I got hooked on, actually, I don't want to just design roller coasters. A roller coaster isn't interesting to me if it hasn't got a soundtrack, hasn't got a story, hasn't got a reason for being there.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you go to some of the other theme parks, the bigger theme parks in America, where the coasters are literally built over car parks, I don't go on them and I don't visit those theme parks because they're not interesting to me.
No, no. It needs to have a story, a theme, that, and there's just so many layers as well, which come in when it comes to roller coasters, dark rides, or haunted houses, scare attractions. It's not just one single component, and like you say, some of these big parks in America, or even around Europe, where it's just a car park coaster. There's only one element of that. There's no theming. There's no story. And I'm similar to you. It's all about the backstories or things that can change in the future. For example, Nemesis had Subterra, only lasted a few years, but I really enjoyed the story being developed further. Speaking of stories developing further, that how did you sort of develop your love and passion of the industry, of theme parks, roller coasters? How did that sort of work for you?
It was a struggle. We probably won't talk about coronavirus because the struggle is real and carries on. But it was a real struggle because of, you know, through school, I wasn't one of the popular kids, and I'm not, you know, I've never been that sort of popular sort of person because of the learning difficulties that I have. And I'm very proud to discuss and openly discuss the learning difficulties because I do a lot of work in that field to encourage people, regardless of who and what they are, to follow their dreams. Their passions. It's very important to me. But it also means I struggle with I used to struggle with communication a lot. I was very shy. I had a stutter in school. And, that kind of led me down that theme park route. It was a place I could go to escape. It was a place I could go where I could be anything that I wanted to be. And no one was going to hurt me or say I couldn't do something.
Yeah.
So I got through school and went to university and did architecture venue design, which was a bit theme parky. There was hotels, restaurants and nightclubs. And I did a Pirate Cove, which was my final degree that I did, final piece of work at Derby. Then I left and tried to find a job in the industry. But back then in 2005, and I say back then, it doesn't sound that long, but in 2005, the internet didn't have as much of the information then as it does now. So Bollinger and Mabillard didn't have a website. Wow. And lots of these companies didn't have a website. Now you can go on people's websites and see floor plans and drawings of working rides. And, you knew who you could, you didn't really know who you could go and talk to. So being from England, the industry and the design industry isn't big. And it wasn't, wasn't big. So I was like, well, where do I go? Where am I able to do this? And I just couldn't work out what to do or how to do it. And there was a few companies that I spoke to and I got a little bit of interest for, but I don't think I could communicate what it is that I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll probably come onto that a little bit later of what I do.
Of course.
And we'll see if we can blow people's heads with that conversation. So it was very, very challenging because I wanted to do everything. I wanted to be involved with the lighting, the sound, the colour, the story, the ride and design the ride. And what does it look like? What does the merchandise do? So when you're that enthusiastic and you're going in there saying you want to do everything, a company hires you to do a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. And you come across like you're going to be a pain in the posterior, with me saying it very politely. And that's kind of how I help people now when they come and talk to me. I try and take them through the stages to try and help them in a job interview on how to kind of get further.
Yeah.
So I think I just terrified people. And
like you're coming on too strong sort of thing on a first date.
Yeah, you possibly can't do all of those things. You know, not one person can do all of those different things. So it was very difficult and I didn't really have a mentor. So it got to a stage where I was going to backwards and forwards to America doing summer camp. And I met someone at summer camp and then I stayed with their family in California. Okay. And I met a guy over there called Jerry Jewell, who owned a company called Schooltronics. And at the time, he was running a sort of education thing called Scary You. And it was an activity after school where students would come and they would build a haunted house. They would build a terror house. And nice. I went, met Jerry, and he said, well, you know, it's volunteer, but come and do it. And we became great friends and still are. And it was something I did for 3 years, and I would go back there and we would build this haunted house. That's where I learned everything about DMX. I learned about animatronics. I learned how to code a show. I learned everything about when you go and press a button on X, it makes B. Or when you go and press a button on A, we'll do the alphabet properly, A, then it makes B happen. If you press C, it stops everything. Yes. The very basic principle of a show control system. So I brought all of that learning back. Now, I'd already been working in architecture for 7 years. So right, okay. I knew about building codes. I knew about fire evacuations and disability access and all of that stuff on actually how to design a layout.
Yes.
I had the skills of telling a story because that's what I've always been doing. Mm-hmm. And I made a decision. In 2012, I'd just built a, worked with Silver Mountain and did the Black Chasm.
Yes.
Over there. And I was approached by some farmers at ScareCon who, after I gave a talk, who said that they've got an event called Screamfest and they need help because the attractions aren't good enough and they don't know why. They've been trying really hard, but it's just, something's just not clicking. So they wanted me to go along to their farm in Burton-on-Trent and have a conversation about what they could do.
Definitely.
So I designed an attraction called Slasher and I'd written it. It was designed and I took it along just out of the chance to say, look, this is what I can do for you.
Yeah.
I took the skull along, my animatronic skull, and I took two par lights. A par light is an LED par light, RGB white. And I had a very crude show setup to prove that the lights were flashing. You press a button, the skull does something, and then it all goes back round. Mm-hmm. To prove to them that Slasher was indeed possible to do.
Definitely.
Now, when I talk about Slasher, you've got to remember that the haunt industry in the UK wasn't really very big.
It's definitely. I mean, 9 years ago now, Slasher really was just, it blew everyone away because we just weren't used to something so,
insane.
I'm going to use the word, so insane, especially at a farm park as well, because I remember going to Screamfest Burton, I think I went 2010 and 11, and just going back from what you mentioned with the farmers saying that they weren't quite sure their attractions were quite right, and although they were enjoyable,
they had a hayride in the barn, didn't they?
Yeah, hayride in the barn, and they were enjoyable, but it was like an old school style of haunt, isn't it? If that makes sense, there was nothing glamorous about it. If that makes sense,
if I remember rightly, it was a collection of horror scenes which had characters in that could or may not be referenced to a film that was out there. There was no real narrative or story. It was just kind of random scenes.
Yeah,
of horror.
Random. There might have been one smoke machine and there might have been one strobe at the end or something. And obviously our trusty old chainsaw in there. But it was very basic stuff. And don't get me wrong, enjoyable. I had a good time. But they needed someone like you to come along to get them. Not just them, but I think the entire industry in the UK, especially when it comes to farm parks and terror farms, those sort of things, to get the UK scare attractions to that next level. And I think Slashers definitely did that.
Thank you for saying that, because it sort of means a lot, because you've got to remember when I did Slasher, I thought I was an X Factor singer that couldn't sing. that's honestly where my head was, because I'd been trying for so long.
Yes.
To do this, and no one was giving me a chance, and I just thought, am I that person that believes he can do this and people want to see it, and actually it's terrible. So all of that stuff was going kind of through my head. You know, everything was on that. In fact, I remember when I was designing Slash, I put all of my passion and emotion to it. I became quite a nasty person because I took on the actual persona of the lead character in there. And I think when people went on there, they could feel it when they came out. You know, people when they came out of Slasher felt on edge.
Yes,
definitely. They felt that emotion that was going on in there, which is great, because that's that emotional connection when we talk about movie attractions, which we can talk about a little further if you're interested.
Yeah, of course.
So we started building Slasher. I built it with them. I painted it. You know, I did the soundtrack for it, so the Slasher screaming in the electric chair is me screaming.
Wow.
And I worked with a very, very talented sound guy named Chris, and he was a student that I met on a train.
Okay.
Where was he going? I think he was going to London, and I was drawing Slasher on the train, and he kind of sat next to me and said, what are you doing? And I told him all about Slash, and he goes, well, I'm a music student. It was just, again, it was just like the stars kind of coming together.
Yeah, definitely. The planets aligning.
Yeah, he needed a piece of thesis work to do for uni, and I needed bespoke music. All the music, all of my horror attractions is bespoke.
Yes.
All of it. It's all written, and it's all scripted, every single one of them. I've never used stock footage on any of the stuff that we've done there. And Slasher is an incredible soundtrack. It's absolutely beautiful when it's all together, and there's a lot of detail in there that people didn't hear. When the attraction's turned on, the attraction breathes and talks
That's insane.
Throughout the entire attraction. Now, the only people that have ever heard that is myself, the farmers, and the actors before they started pressing buttons.
Yes, to put the show's into action, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, I bet.
It's really creepy. And probably what I'll do one day is I'll make the soundtrack and I'll do a mix and bring it all together so we can actually play and hear that.
Oh, yes. I know so many people that would be excited to hear that 100%.
Absolutely. I'm actually working on them. I've started working on the VR experience for it, where I've got the original horror house and I'm building it in Unreal with all the soundtracks and shows on there. So, because it would just be great to have it on there.
I was chatting to someone not too long ago on a podcast saying we need more virtual reality / haunt stuff, and there we go.
That's where I'm going.
Andy Porter's doing it for us, winner.
I'm going to be the if Slasher did it for UK haunts, I'm going to do it for the UK VR industry.
Yes,
on that,
definitely.
So, I mean, going back to Slasher, it was a very quick build. It's a tiny building. It's only 9.7 meters by 7.5. It's a tiny, tiny thing, and its downfall was it just couldn't shift enough people.
Yeah.
You know, it was only doing 450 people per hour. We added another execution room to it,
yes.
So it had two execution rooms for the show. But even then, it became difficult to operate, and it lasted 3 years. And I think it stays in the hearts of a lot of people. It's why I wear the jacket still,
yes.
Because people recognize me for it.
Definitely.
But yeah, very, very, very proud of everything that went into that. It was a massive emotional journey doing it. And it'll be back one day. I'm not sure how or why, but it'll probably come back somewhere.
No, definitely. Well, we've all got our fingers crossed, because Slash is something that it's one of those it sort of becomes the cult classic within our crazy world of UK haunts and scare entertainment. You know, people... if they're down south, they'll tend to say Saw was their sort of either their first attraction or their favorite attraction and whatnot. But up here, if it's not something like The Sanctuary, it's definitely a Slasher. And again, you know, we're forgetting as well, this was almost 10 years ago at a UK farm park, the National Forest Adventure Farm. And it really just... It was the start of something incredible, really, because it wasn't just Slasher you created. Moving on, you've now actually sort of set up camp at Screamfest Burton in a way, because you've created so many more attractions for them. You know, Nocturnals and Soul Seekers came. They came literally the year after in 2013, didn't they?
I'm impressed. They did. Yeah, they did. And I think, you know, just going back to Slasher, as I say, you know, when we built it and when it came about, this stuff didn't exist in the UK. You know, people didn't think they could create cheap show control systems.
Yeah.
And I think Slash has showed the industry that in the Horn area, you didn't have to be a theme park to build this quality of show.
Yes, definitely.
It could be simply achieved just by using simple DMX and well-scripted. And we started to see some incredible creative stuff year on year in the UK haunt industry, and we still do, and it's very exciting. But I'm impressed. Yes, 2013 was Nocturnal and Soulseekers, and Soulseekers is a funny one actually, how that came about.
I think I remember you telling. I went to the press night, and wasn't it supposed to be sort of like the re-theme of their barn? And you're like, nope, I'm giving you Soulseekers.
It was.
So tell us about that story then. Tell us how Nocturnal and the re-theme of the barn turned into Nocturnal and Soulseekers.
It's hard to tell anyone you can't fix it. It's a really hard conversation to have with anyone when you go to them and you look at, you know, what they've created, and you go, let's look at this instead. And Nocturnal was going to be the next one that we did. Mm-hmm. I walked around the farm park, and they had this milking parlour that was just abandoned. It wasn't being used for anything. It had storage in there. And I'm like, wow, this is just asking for a vampire nightclub to go into it. 100%. And that's kind of how Nocturnal sort of happened. And it's still, we can't take Nocturnal, well, I should say Love Hurts Down, because of it's just so solidly imprinted. In fact, I only just learned 2 days ago that Insomnia has been bought down after 3 years of being standing, which was very sad for me about 3 days ago. So we've taken Insomnia down, but that goes on. But no, Soulseekers was it came about because they said, well, can you look at what you can do to make the barn as good as Slasher or as Nocturnal? So I redesigned the whole thing and did Soulseekers, which Kate Groves and Sam Bott poured their heart and souls into painting, decorating and building it and putting all of their love into that attraction while I was chuntering away in Nocturnal, making all the wood look like concrete. And I still think I've got like repeated hand injury from stippling all that concrete on those walls. So, yeah.
Crikey. And two solid attractions as well. And again, it kind of, I mean, Screamfest, I kind of got into the industry around the time of Slasher anyway, so sort of 2012. I think I'd been to a few of the theme park Fright Nights and Scarefest like the year or two before, but I was still relatively new. But the growth of Screamfest compared to sort of like the rest of the UK, because of the likes of Slasher, then Nocturnal, Soulseekers, moving on to Love Hurts, Demonica, Nightbringer, Insomnia, you know, there's just attraction after attraction after attraction, and they all seem to be Andy Porter instant classics. And I think that it's because of the, again, we touched on it earlier about the, you know, roller coasters and rides that don't really have much of a story. Well, it just sort of seems to be the same for haunted attractions, doesn't it? You really do put into the story with your pre-shows, like you say, the type of music is all bespoke. Sort of how, this is probably a hard question to answer because there's probably no direct route for it, but where do these ideas come from? How do you sort of go from, right, I'm going to make a maze about this, or do some things, I know that I think Insomnia wasn't originally meant to be a scare maze, was it? It was meant to be a different kind of production. So how do you get from Andy Porter's mind to creating these insane scare attractions?
I think I'm a bit broken.
in a good way.
The world is full of stories, and we experience them every day. Some of them are happy, some of them are sad. Mm-hmm. I'm an emotional designer, and I'm a storyteller. And it doesn't matter if you're designing, when I worked for Merlin, rides like the Gruffalo, River Ride Adventure, Peppa Pig, Kung Fu Panda, all the way through the rides that we did at Chessington and the new one opening hopefully this year, Croc Drop, which was the final project I did for Chessington. they're all about stories, and they're all about engaging your audience in worlds and things that you couldn't normally do. Now, the horror stuff for me is a little bit different, because horror is the root of all of our emotions.
Yes.
A lot of people are quite offensive, actually, to me when they talk to me about horror attractions. They go, horror is easy. It's the easiest thing to do.
Oh.
And I look at them and say, you do it.
Yeah, go on. You give it a go.
You do it, because it's not.
No.
There's a difference between horror of just having blood and guts and screaming and scenes that just make you want to be sick, or you're trying to design an attraction to traumatize people.
Yeah.
I want to make this really, really clear. I have never designed an attraction at Screamfest to traumatize anyone.
No.
My attractions are very camp. They're very tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. There is always something in one of my attractions that will make you laugh.
Yes.
There is always something in there that will make you realize that this is scary, but actually we're doing this as a family. We're having fun as a family. And when you leave one of my mazes, you will come out laughing, probably more so in Hillbilly Joe than any of the others.
Yeah.
Yes. But the point is, I don't take them too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But at that same time, I am dealing with topics that politically mean something to me. So, you know, I've got to be careful how I talk about them, because when you look on the forums, people haven't got all of them.
Yeah.
When people discuss my mazes, it's interesting how people perceive them and what they see and what I originally wrote them to be. Some people get them, some people don't, but when you create attractions, you are creating art, and you are putting your opinions out into the world for the world to judge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for me to tell someone how they perceived something that I designed. That is up to them. And that is the whole point of what I do.
Yes.
It's all about personal experiences. So let's look at insomnia, because insomnia is a great thing. I write stories as novels and as books.
Yeah.
That's where they start. Slash has got a massive book behind it. Wow. Nocturnal has. Insomnia does as well. And I hopefully one day to publish them.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, Insomnia was written to be a Broadway show, to be on stage.
Wow, okay.
That's originally where it was done. And it's set in 1920. And it's also set in a children's orphanage in a nunnery. And I am not going to create a terror maze around a children's orphanage. It's just,
no.
It's a line that you don't
cross.
Yes,
definitely, definitely.
It's not what you do, and it's just not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to bring Insomnia's story up to modern day and change the character of Tabitha and the problem that she's having, and also more so about what the mother's having. So
yes.
When we talk about movie attractions, it's the holy grail, because a lot of the word that gets thrown around is immersion.
Yes.
Oh, I design immersive attractions. Well, you tell me what that is, because if you've got an LED screen in there that's curved, that's not immersive.
Yes, yes.
You know, immersion is taking an audience to understand what the story is, why the story is happening, and to create an emotional connection with the characters that are there, so when people leave your maze, they understand who, what, where, why,
yeah,
and why it's upset them.
Definitely, definitely.
Now, we did that with Slasher, and I tried to do it with... I can't remember the name of it now. It was called Static, but they called it Nightbringer.
I remember Nightbringer, yeah.
It was originally called Static. Right. It's meant to be called Static. That was the thing of it. You know, and insomnia really is about parents talking to their kids.
Yes.
That's what it's about. You're in there, there's a child that's obviously very disturbed, but the mother is not listening to her.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks it's the TV that's causing the problem. She thinks it's her friends causing the problem. She thinks it's what she's reading, what she's doing. She doesn't actually listen to actually what the real problem is.
Yeah, yeah.
So the beginning of insomnia is this child reaching out to people like us who are riding the attraction for help.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's struggling with all of these different things. So the emotional connection is aimed at adults, really,
yeah,
because that's what the target audience of Soul Seekers was. And I didn't want to lose that audience.
Yes, yeah.
And that's important when you look at an event and all the attractions I designed, to make sure that each attraction is very unique, very different, and catering to different audiences.
Absolutely, definitely. And they all have such a different feel. And like you say, the younger generation might prefer Love Hurts compared to me, who loved Soul Seekers and whatnot.
Exactly.
Just get different emotional connections to each attraction, wouldn't you?
But hopefully you still find things in Love Hurts that you can go, actually, you know, this is quite cool, I enjoy this. It's not my whole cup of tea, but it's still good fun.
Definitely, yeah, so definitely.
It's that sort of thing. And you're never going to be able to make an attraction which is everyone's cup of course, tea. But you need to make sure your event caters for as much as you possibly can. We have like a 90-year-old that comes every year, bless her.
Oh, wow.
She loves it. And, you know, so when you're looking at something like Insomnia, it's got to appeal to the teenagers. Well, every teenager's had a nightmare.
Yeah.
Or they are having nightmares. They've got problems and they can relate to this child. They can relate to the mother. Mm-hmm. So when you leave the attraction, you feel bad for the mother. And there's actually a line at the end of the attraction that some people saw and some people didn't. And I have to point it out to a few. Time to wake up. Time to stop dreaming. It's time to call the babysitter.
Right.
And the amount of people at the end of that ride who had their phones on, they're talking at home, and, you know, and they saw me, they knew, oh, it was a great ride, everything. Oh, I'm on the phone tip. Or I was calling the babysitter, and I'd point to the thing that says, better call the babysitter, and they went, how do you
wow.
do it?
Wow.
How do you do that? It's all through this psychological design, and it's taken me 9 years to do it.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool. You're getting people to, that's some Darren Brown stuff in an attraction, that is, Andy.
It is, but I put all of that design knowledge into everything that I do.
Yeah, yeah.
The same theory and design knowledge in the Gruffalo is from that.
Mm.
It's creating a heartbeat in an attraction that encourages people to go on a ride. So if you're a child and you go on the Gruffalo at Chessington World of Adventure, you'll love it because it's the Gruffalo.
Of course.
But the attraction doesn't patronise all of the adults that are on it. Because of the way that we've created the story and we've created the lighting, we've made it safe environment for the kids who are just going to love it.
Yes.
But it's not a childish attraction at all.
Oh, no, definitely.
And that's with the success of Room on the Broom, the Gruffalo, and all of the attractions that I design as a theme park designer.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, it's worth pointing out that I am now taking Insomnia and I am designing a trackless dark ride around it.
Wow, that's incredible. So
that is the state of it, and Slash has got a roller coaster on the side of it now.
Oh gosh, exclusives here, guys. Wow, keep an eye
for
that.
I think the important thing is to put out there to all of your listeners is when you are a designer and you design these attractions and you're putting all of this idea into brands, the sky is the limit.
Yeah.
You have a brand, you have an IP, you have characters. Never be put off if you're building these things in your garages that you don't think they can go further. Of course they can.
Of course.
They can because you believe in it, you wrote them, and you put it on there. So after you've opened it and you've seen how the audience reacts to it, how could that work as a roller coaster or as a movie or whatever it is? And it's passionate people like us that bring joy to thousands and millions of people that go on our attractions.
Yeah.
And you should never stop dreaming of actually how far could I push this idea?
Absolutely.
Ever.
Definitely. Ever. That's amazing. And I mean, to think that we could, you said it earlier with Slasher having VR and whatnot, and now it has a roller coaster next to it and making trackless dark rides. Like you say, the sky's the limit because these are your babies and you can do as you wish with them, really.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it all. And it led me on to having a fantastic career, you know, at Merlin, where I was there for 6, going on 7 years designing some actually incredible stuff, and decided to start our own company up, Firefly Creations, where we're designing these attractions for the whole world.
Well, that's a perfect segue, really. I mean, I don't want to, obviously our listeners are they're theme park geeks, they're horror nerds and whatnot, so to know that not only have they potentially been through one of your scare mazes at Burton Screen Fest, whether it be Terror Mountain and whatnot, but yet, like you say, you've worked with the Gruffalo, and how was that time with Merlin and working on some of their IP attractions, but also their own attractions as well?
I mean, it was a whirlwind, and I'm, you know, very proud of everything that I achieved while I was there.
Definitely.
You know, very, very positive, beautiful memories. How many, you know, if you remember when we go back to the beginning of this in 1998, I became a theme park enthusiast and going on Oblivion.
Yeah.
You know, started with Nemesis, but yeah, Oblivion opened. My first job at Merlin Entertainment was designing Oblivion, the Black Hole at Gardaland.
Wow, full circle. So, absolute full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an absolute privilege and honour to work with Candy Holland.
Yes.
And, you know, create something that to this day, when I go and see, I can't believe I actually had the ability to do that. But also working on things like Kung Fu Panda and Croc Drop that's opening at Chessington, and, you know, all of these wonderful things that have entertained millions of people. It's a great feeling when you open something, you see family and friends coming off having a wonderful time.
Absolutely.
And it takes me back to exactly my passion. I design theme parks to make the world a better place, and it's something I've always wanted to do since I was a child. And I'm very fortunate to have had the ability to do it, but it's been a hard road to get there. Yes. And this new journey that we're now doing with Firefly Creations, unfortunately, we established it in 2020 with coronavirus, but we still see a lot of positivity. And I think this will date your podcast, so I'm terribly sorry.
No, it's okay.
the message is one of a good one to kind of sign off on. While everything does seem pretty dismal right now, mm-hmm. you've got to remember this is a blip in history. Absolutely. We've been here before. This has happened to the globe many, many times. And what this will do is will allow us, when the parks reopen, when we can go out and enjoy, laugh and sing and dance together once again, it'll be ever the more important that these experiences open so you can reconnect with your friends and family again.
Definitely.
And when we can do it, people like me will be there to make sure that we can orchestrate those moments for you. And that's all that matters to me.
Absolutely, definitely. And you know what, Andy, I think that is the perfect sort of perfect thing to take away towards the end of this interview for all our listeners, anyone listening to this. Just like you say, Andy, a blip in history, and people like you will be there to keep us entertained once again once it's all over, and hopefully sooner rather than later. Like you say, I mean lots of people looking forward to Croc Drop, and you've worked on that down at Chessington as well, and of course moving on with Firefly Creations Limited. You know, there's nothing that you guys don't do, is there? That just before we do end on this, in case there's anyone listening you know, working in within theme parks and haunted attractions or whatnot, what are sort of the key things that Firefly Creations can do for a theme park or a company?
So Firefly Creations is a creative design services and also theme park consultants. So we have the ability to design an attraction from its initial conception, working out who the audience is, mm-hmm. Why they want to go it, what the trends are, to then go into a blue sky, look at the concept, design that, and take it from concept all the way through detailed design, fabrication, and opening for the guests on the day. So we offer all of those services, but we also offer consultancy services to come into a theme park, look at their existing park, and give them suggestions and ideas on how to make it more successful, or maybe even open Slasher.
Yeah, absolutely. Or yeah, get Slasher in there, definitely.
Absolutely. But we are a theme park design and creative company. Everything from roller coasters, dark ride, FECs, hotels and restaurants. We are your people. If you would like something that the world's never seen before, get me involved and I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Absolutely. And anyone listening to that who wants to get in contact with Andy, the website is www.fireflycreations.uk. So that's the website, guys. And Andy, first of all, thank you so much for coming on to ScareTrack. Sincerely do appreciate it. And best of luck moving forward.
Thanks, Mikey. Thanks, everyone.
You're listening to
ScareTrack. So there we go, folks. First of all, a huge thank you to Andrew Porter for coming on to the ScareTrack podcast, talking about how he got into the industry himself, how Slasher became an attraction at Screamfest Burton, and of course his work with Merlin Magic Making as well. I'm very excited to get on Croc Drop, and I can't wait to get back to Screamfest Burton this Halloween season. It's going to be awesome. It really did leave a big hole in my Halloween lineup last year, so can't wait to get out and check out Screamfest Burton again for the 2021 season. And of course, Firefly Creations, very excited about what the future holds for that company. Check them out yourself, guys. Head over to their website, www.fireflycreations.uk. So that brings us almost to the end of this episode, but Andrew Porter will be back on ScareTrack within the next month or two answering your questions. So if you have any questions that you want to give to Andrew Porter, let us know via our Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, or Facebook, or you can send us a direct email. Now, if you're not already following us, make sure you do. We are on all the social medias. Just search for ScareTrack, or our email is scaretrack@gmail.com. Like I say, we're on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook. Just search for ScareTrack. So that brings us to the end of this episode. A huge thank you for listening. Be sure to check out all our YouTube content at youtube.com/ScareTrack, and make sure you subscribe to this podcast feed on whatever device and whatever platform you are listening on. A huge thank you for listening, and let's get scared.